And welcome to the Leadership Lowdown. This is the Michigan Business Network. I'm Vic Versero, and so glad you took time to join us today. And I am absolutely honored to have with us a guest that I had the privilege of meeting just a little while ago and was so awestruck by him that I thought, oh my word, we've got to bring this guy to our listeners. And by golly, he agreed to join us. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome George Franklin to our show. He is an author, speaker, and has tremendous credentials. 4 books. He's a lawyer, been involved with a Fortune 500 company in a worldwide executive leadership role. He's a former chairman of the Western Michigan University. Wow, it's just fantastic to have you. George, welcome to our show.
Well, Vic, thanks for having me. That was fun the other day in Lansing at the luncheon, and that introduction would make my mother proud. I'm not sure how close to reality it was, but it sounded pretty good to me. So
we'll use it, okay? We'll use that one.
You got it.
George, you are just so much fun to be around and so impressive, and I'm not just saying that because some of the things that you've done in your life and the way you've lived your life is an inspiration to me, and I don't even know all that I need to know about you, and I'm looking forward to getting to know the ins and outs. But before we get too far down that path, give me kind of the overview of you and what you're currently doing and what you've done in the past. We'll get into some details later, but give the audience a little context for who you are.
Sure. Well, my latest, I just came out with my 4th book. It's called A Feeding Frenzy in Washington. It's satirical fiction, but as I like to emphasize, it has a thread of reality throughout. And by God, when you're trying to make fun of Congress, you've got a lot of material to work with.
Oh, my goodness, you do.
You know, my background and whatever success I've had, I was looking at the other day thinking, you know, each way, at each stop, there's been a mentor or someone who's helped direct me and has really, you know, given me focus about who I am and where I ought to be going. I grew up in the South Side of Chicago, little Irish Catholic pocket in the South Side. 8th grade, I guess it was, we moved to Tampa, Florida, where I then went to Jesuit high school. And I always got a kick out of here. I was growing up with people named O'Reilly and Fitzpatrick. And all of a sudden, my best friends were Suarez, Arduingo, and Traviesa.
Go figure.
So who the hell are these guys, right? But anyway, so I went to Jesuit high school. And then I went 1 year at the University of Florida. And I will emphasize, it was 1 year.
Did you learn all you needed to know? Is that why it was only 1 year?
I was not excelling academically.
Fair enough.
It was one hell of a year. But anyway, so I quit college. And this is for where sort of the first real mentor in my life kicked in. And I sort of divide my life into buckets of politics, business, and books. And I always loved politics. And so I'm 19 years old. And I go to Washington, D.C. And there was a congressman from New Jersey, a guy named Frank Thompson. And he was looking for a gopher. And I was cheap, and I was available.
Oh.
So I ended up being his gopher. So I drove the car. I, you know, ran to the store. You know, I was your basic gopher. But it was one of the great political educations I ever could have gotten. Because unlike sort of normal interns who are out there in the office and answering form letters and, you know, going watching hearings and all, I was actually privy to conversations. I remember, like, you know, Chip O'Neill and then Congressman John Bradamus, who some listeners might remember. They were, you know, Democrat leaders. I'd be in the back of the room during the meeting, or I'd be in the car, or I'd be at the event. And he was a great role model for me in that, first of all, he said he's going to fire me unless I went back to college. So I worked for him in the day and went to college and law school at American University, working for him. But he was a great inspiration to me, and I just watched how he treated people, how he acted politically, the decency he had. It was a great education. And anyway, so I get out of law school, and Kellogg Company didn't have anybody in Washington at that time, and there were 2 big threats to Kellogg Company. One was an antitrust case called the shared monopoly case, which literally would have broken the Kellogg Company into 3 companies. So it was life and death for Kellogg.
Wow.
And the other big one was they were trying to ban advertising to children, which when about a 30-year business is kid related, that's a, you know, significant hit. So, but the interesting part, Vic, was for business people that don't want to get involved in politics, you know, the old adage, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I heard that one.
Well, Kellogg was on the menu. And the lead attorney for the Federal Trade Commission, which is the group that brought the antitrust case against Kellogg and other cereal makers, was actually quoted in Newsweek magazine, which then was a big to-do. They asked them, they said, why did you pick the cereal industry? You could have gone after autos or glass or tires or, you know, all sorts of other concentrated industries. And his quote was, they lack the political clout to muddy the water.
Wow. It made them an easy mark, I guess, in what they were.
Yeah.
Wow, isn't that something?
You know, Kellogg sitting out in Battle Creek making cereal, you know, minding their own business and doing what you're supposed to do. And all of a sudden, you know, here comes the wrath of the federal government.
And honestly, that made just so much sense that you had an opportunity to step in there and it just changed everything. Well, you're going to be changing everything today for us because we've got you right here on the Leadership Lowdown. This is the Michigan Business Network. I'm Vic Verschereau, and I've got George Franklin with us right now, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Physicians Health Plan is local. For 35 years, we've been a part of your community, and we take pride in helping you get the coverage, care, and personal service you deserve. Go to phpmichigan.com for more information. We're the health plan that works for you.
And we're back right here on the Leadership Lowdown. This is the Michigan Business Network. So glad we've got George Franklin with us. He's an author and speaker, and he's unpacking the early years of the Franklin Enterprises. And so he's telling us that he got connected with Kellogg because they were basically an easy mark, if you will, because they weren't politically active. Did I get that right, George?
You got it right on, Vic. That's exactly. Oh, I'm really dating myself now. I got out of law school in 76 for 76 to 80, I had a law firm with another fella, and Kellogg was a client, and I was the de facto Washington office because they didn't have anybody else there.
Sure.
And so, you know, my focus was to end this antitrust case. So anyways, we were successful. And in 1980, I went to work full-time for Kellogg. And this is when the other mentor in my life entered, a fellow named, who a lot of your listeners will recognize, Bill Lamothe.
Mm.
And Bill Lamothe had worked his way up the ranks. He was the creator of Pop-Tarts, by the way.
And that is no small grocery line for the Kellogg Company, is it?
No. But I learned so much about leadership and dignity and every positive aspect of being an executive you can imagine, I learned from Bill Lamothe. And he became chairman and CEO. And there was one event under his tenure, other than ending this FTC antitrust case, that was really powerful. Once again, your listeners might remember, this was the era when apartheid existed in South Africa.
Oh, sure.
And it was evil. It was abhorrent. And there was a lot of pressure on American companies to divest. And it was a huge domestic issue. Now, the South African business was less than 1% of Kellogg's business. But Bill Lamothe said, we are going to stay in South Africa, and we are going to treat the employees that we have in South Africa, black and white, the same as if they were in Battle Creek or Omaha. And that is, there will be no segregation, there will be no discrimination. And we were also politically positioned very interestingly, because being in Battle Creek, our congressman, along with Upjohn's congressman, by the way, back then,
oh, sure,
was Howard Wolpe.
Oh, yeah, so right.
Howard was a decent, good man. Let me emphasize that. He was the chair of the Africa subcommittee, and he was a huge proponent of divestiture. Okay. So here are the two biggest employers in his district are at total odds with him over this issue, which was something the South African government was well aware of. So we did things like we recognized the black trade union, even though it was illegal.
Oh,
and
wow.
We knew they'd leave us alone because of our geographic position and our position on this policy of divestiture. We also had, and this is where it really gets fascinating, the lead person for the Black Trade Union was a fellow named Christopher Lamini. He was a member of the African National Congress under Mandela. Not directly under, but he was high up in it.
Yep.
And to the South Africans, he was a, you know, revolutionary and an enemy of the state. To the Black South Africans, he was a freedom fighter. And he was our employee. Well, we knew it was going to happen eventually. And one Saturday morning, our nightmare occurred. I got a call from the plant manager in Spring, South Africa, which is right outside of Johannesburg.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, it's happened. He said the state police have gone into the Black township of Kwatema, and they've taken Christopher away. This, Vic, is at a time when people were magically falling out of windows and magically being found hung. And,
you may not be coming back if that happened, huh?
Exactly. And I went, holy, holy Lord, you know. And so I said, okay. So I called Bill Lamothe at home in Battle Creek. And I said, well, you know, our nightmares come true. The state police have come and taken Christopher. And we don't know where he is, but we do know he's in great danger. And Lamothe, without hesitation, he said, I want you to get a message to President Botha, President P.W. Botha, who's president of South Africa, who, to give you an idea of what kind of guy he was, was the crocodile. Okay. But he was the president of South Africa. And he said, I want you to get a message to him that if Christopher is not released immediately unharmed, I'm walking out this front door and announcing we are leaving South Africa.
Ooh.
And I went, holy expletive. I said, do you really want me to do that? He said, absolutely.
Okay. Bill, there's no negotiations. Yeah. This is the way it's going to be, right?
Exactly.
Oh, my word.
I go out. I knew the South African ambassador to the United States just from, you know, political things going on in Washington. So Monday morning, I get on the phone and get his secretary, and I said, would you please ask the ambassador if he would pass this message along to President Botha? Christopher has been arrested. We don't know where he is. And please advise him that if Christopher is not released immediately unharmed, Mr. Lamothe is going to walk out the front door of Kellogg and announce we are leaving South Africa. Well, the next day, President Botha called Bill Lamothe at Kellogg.
All right, here's what we do. I got to tell you this, George. This is what we call in the business a cliffhanger. We're not going to allow you to tell us what happens next because we're going to go take a commercial break and come right back. I can't wait to hear the rest of the stories. We're so excited to have George Franklin with us right here on the Leadership Lowdown. We'll be right back.
The Michigan Works Association believes the key to advancing prosperity across the state is accomplished through building a skilled workforce. As the state's primary workforce development association, their focus is to continue to move the needle on policy, education, and collaboration. They're creating an opportunity and building stronger communities by advocating and innovating together.
We're back right here on the Leadership Lowdown on the Michigan Business Network. George Franklin is about to tell us what's next in this major high-stakes event that's happening. And again, George, the year of this is right at the height of the apartheid actions in South Africa. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's when President Botha was still the president. That's before President F.W. de Klerk became president.
Yes.
So we're talking a few years before the end of apartheid. So I get the message to President Botha. Obviously, it got to him because he calls Mr. Lamothe and says that Christopher would be released immediately unharmed as he was. And there's a guy named Joe Stewart, who African-American. I worked with at Kellogg, and he and I would yearly go to South Africa. And we had a good relationship with Christopher. So after all this happened, Joe and I went back to South Africa, and Christopher told us, he said, if Kellogg had not intervened, I'd be dead.
Oh, I mean, wow. He just knew it.
What happened. So, but on the, a fun ending to the story. The fun ending, of course, was Christopher's release.
The best,
yep. But to add to it, Mandela is released from Robben Island. Apartheid ends. Christopher becomes a member of Parliament.
Oh.
So he went from making cornflakes on the floor to a member of Parliament. And then years later, ended up ambassador to China.
Oh, my word. Well, and isn't that what we say, George? We all have to go through adversity so we can appreciate the good times in our life. And wow, what an amazing situation from virtual almost death to the top of the world. Oh, my word. That's a great story.
But it was classic Bill DeMoss, though. He had such integrity and conviction. And he just had strong convictions that you knew that you could rely on him, and he would stick to his guns. And what people didn't understand on the whole South Africa, it wasn't anything about money. That's why I go back when we started, because it was less than 1% of
sure.
the company's business. I mean, the headache was keeping it, really, because, you know, there were threats of boycotts in the United States. There was all sorts of, you know, people wanted to, you know, like I said, boycott the company. And, you know, the students at universities were all upset with Kellogg. But it was, he just said, you know, this is the right thing to do. And if we leave South Africa for this reason, what other countries are going to leave for whatever other reasons?
I mean, right.
The world is not perfect out there. And we're going to stick by our guns. And it was great. And, you know, I was very proud that, you know, in a moment of temporary insanity, I ran for Congress. I told you about
it. Yeah, right.
In the Democratic primary, I found out if you come in second, that doesn't work. But actually, what I was very proud of was that Howard Volpe, the congressman we were talking about, his widow endorsed me.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's
said,
a Republican side, isn't it?
No, he's Democrat. He's
okay,
Democrat
sorry. Congress. Okay, all right.
And Howard had been he was a liberal Democrat. But despite all this South Africa activity and the company being at odds with Howard and everybody, you know, we had all these problems, she endorsed me, which I was very proud of that, actually. I was very proud.
Yeah, I should say so. I want to ask you something, George. I'm sorry to derail you, but, you know, when we go back to Bill LaMotte, you're working with truly a man that's in charge of, what, a Fortune 50 company? I mean, this is a massive company, worldwide footprint. And let me ask you this. When you work with somebody that has that much, he strikes me as a powerful individual. Can you speak truth to him without fear of losing? Tell me about that.
Yeah, actually. In fact, the reason I got promoted, I'm convinced, is because I spoke the truth to him.
Mm.
And I mentioned this big antitrust case that was going on. And it was, you know, literally life and death for the company. So he was spending a lot of time in Washington. And we had one of outside lobbyists working for us. This was 1980, right after Carter had lost. A fella who had been in the Carter White House in legislative affairs. And he had the home phone numbers of every senator and congressman, right? Because of, you know, being in the White House. And we were having a meeting downtown, and he's long gone, so I can say it. It was Senator Percy of Illinois. And Senator Percy had made some promises to us during his campaign for reelection. Well, let's just put it this way. He was not fulfilling them.
Okay.
Right? And Bill LaMotte was livid. I mean, he was livid, right? Because he's a guy, you shook his hand.
You got a deal.
You got a deal.
Yep.
You stick to it. And, you know, so we're in this lobbyist office downtown, and he looks at the guy from the former Carter White House, and he said, give me Percy's home number. I'm going to call him. And the guy went, well, okay, you know, I guess. And I looked at him. I said, Bill, I don't think that's a good idea. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, it's not going to prove anything. All it's going to do, you know, is irritate the person by calling them at home. We can wait until he's in the office tomorrow and do it sort of more appropriately when everybody's, you know, a little more, I'm not sure how I said it, you know, level-headed.
Really, yeah, right.
And he sort of looked at me, and I could tell he didn't know whether to fire me
what? It crossed his mind.
He looked at me, and he just looked at me and said this cold stare, and then finally said, yeah, I guess you're right.
How about
and
that?
Then we moved on.
Well, and these are some fantastic stories. George Franklin's with us here on the Leadership Lowdown. I can't thank you enough, George, for being here. Can't thank you enough for tuning in. We'll be right back after we pay some bills.
The attorneys of Foster Swift, Collins & Smith offer legal counsel to businesses, families, individuals, and municipalities throughout Michigan, with offices in Lansing, Farmington Hills, Grand Rapids, Detroit, Marquette, and Holland. Clients know they can count on Foster Swift for all their legal needs, from straightforward wills to sophisticated business transactions and complex litigation. Learn more about Foster Swift and how they can assist you at fosterswift.com.
And we're back on the Leadership Lowdown right here on the Michigan Business Network. I'm having the time of my life having the chance to talk to George Franklin, who's an author and speaker with an incredible resume of great things that he's done and some of the worldwide positions that he's been in and some of the great stories he's willing to share with us. You know, George, I got to ask, you've met a bunch of famous people that we all would know. Any other stories come to mind that might be something fun for us to share?
Well, probably arguably the most famous person I've ever met and spent time with was Muhammad Ali.
Oh, for sure. That's a worldwide name right there.
And it's under circumstances that were highly unusual. And what happened was 9/11, we all know where we were and what we were doing pretty well implanted in our heads. But what people don't know, and actually I was very proud about Kellogg because they never advertised this. They never beat their chest about it. And it came from leadership, once again, of another mentor of mine, Carlos Gutierrez, who was then a relatively new CEO. And what happened was, we all, like I said, know 9/11. About 2 or 3 days after 9/11, Carlos got a call from Mayor Giuliani's office. It might have been Governor Pataki, it doesn't matter, one of the two. And they called and said, we need your help. Muhammad Ali, as a Muslim, has spoken out against the violence, and we think it would be a great morale booster and great for, you know, the country in general if we could get him to ground zero.
Wow.
And so Carlos,
this is why it's still smoldering, right? I mean, you're talking just days after.
Yeah, yeah. So Carlos calls me over to his office. I go trotting over to his office and shuts the door, and he says, you know, I've just gotten this call. And what do you think? And I said, well, you know, I think we ought to do it. And he said, okay, you know, I'll tell him we'll, you know, make the plane available, but I want you on the plane with him. We need someone from Kellogg to do this. And I said, okay. So on September 20th, 9 days after 9/11, I get on the Kellogg plane in Battle Creek. We flew to the Whirlpool hangar in Benton Harbor, where his wife Lonnie, and a fellow named Michael. I can't remember Michael's last name right now, but we're waiting for us. We flew on the Kellogg plane to White Plains, New York,
yeah,
where a police escort met us. And I'm going to say now it's, you know, 8:30 in the morning, 8:45. And then, Vic, it was the damnedest day of my life. So Ali and the three of us, the other three, we go to the fire station where basically all the guys had been killed.
Yes.
And the grief was beyond comprehension. I mean, Pataki was there. Giuliani was there. There were some other, you know, dignitaries there. But people, total strangers. First of all, you pull up to this fire station. There's just mounds of flowers in front. And you go in and the reaction to Ali for the rest of the day, I've never been able to adequately describe it, but it was amazing. Total strangers would come up and hug him and grab him and, you know, yank on his sleeve and say, you know, champ, let me tell you where I was when this happened. And I remember the thrill in Manila. And then we stayed there for, I guess, maybe an hour. And then the police escort takes us down to the docks where they had these huge warehouses which was a missing persons location.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And on a wall were hundreds of pictures of missing people, you know, with high school pictures, graduation pictures, getting married pictures. And you just, the grief, once again, you just could not comprehend what you were seeing and feeling. And Ali, we go through this missing persons area. And once again, total strangers just hugging them and, you know, crying and grabbing onto them. And then we went to this CNN headquarters where he read a brief little statement. And then finally, Vic, we did the unimaginable. I've got it, a picture of this in my book, my first book, Raisin Bran and Other Cereal Wars. We're driving down the streets of New York. There's a military checkpoint with armed military. And behind it is what I would guess to have been 13 stories of smoking rubble, which was the World Trade Center. And there it was. It's still smoking.
Wow.
And we pull up and we go. They had all the emergency responder people. They had tents circling the whole World Trade Center where firemen and food supplies and medical and sort of you name it. And we spent, I don't know, couple hours going tent with Ali. Firemen would come out and take your picture, and the cops would take your picture, and the nurses would, and you know, people would hoot and holler that, you know, Ali was there. And so it's like 5:30 or 6 at this point, I'm guessing, and the police escort takes us back to White Plains. We get on the Kellogg's jet, we fly back to Benton Harbor, drop them off, then we take what was a, you know, I think it was about a 10-minute flight. Benton Harbor.
Sure, right.
So I get off, and it's 9:30, 10 o'clock. I get in my car. I live in Kalamazoo. Drive home, and I'm not exaggerating. I got home about midnight, sort of sitting in my living room. And the next day, I got up, and I was like, did I dream this? Did I really do this, what I think I did?
Yeah, and you got to pinch yourself. And I got to tell you, George, your life is one of those kind of lives that I think a lot of us would want to pinch ourselves from the south side of Chicago to the heights of the country's leadership. Simply amazing, and so glad you're sharing your stories here on the Leadership Lowdown. This is the Michigan Business Network. We'll be right back.
Managing your office supplies is key to a seamlessly functioning business. With over 90,000 items available for free next day delivery and no minimum order, DBI can solve all your office supply needs from pencils to coffee at the very best value. Call DBI and ask a sales representative to show you their product offerings, or visit dbiyes.com and request a product catalog. DBI does all things office, office supplies, furniture, and environments.
This is Leadership Lowdown, and I'm Vic Verschereau, having the time of my life with George Franklin, author and speaker, author of 4 books, and a speaker on so many wonderful things. Honestly, I think, George, that given the right set of circumstances, organizations could hire you to come in and talk to their group, and I'm sure they'd be delighted with some of the perspective you can share. And I'm thinking about, as you got back from ground zero and you woke up the next day and it feels a little bit like a dream and you're pinching yourself, you kind of had to go tell your CEO, Carlos Gutierrez, what happened. Was he pleased with the outcome and the day you had?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, so I get in the next day, and, you know, Carlos, you know, well, how'd it go? And I was like, Carlos, that's the damnedest day of my life. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, that I've done all this. And I told him, you know, where we went and how it went. And if I could just editorialize for just a second, though, but sure. I was so proud of Kellogg. Carlos, we didn't issue a press release. We didn't make an announcement. We didn't tell people how wonderful we were. We did it. Carlos just did it because it was the right thing to do.
Wow.
And we went back, and until I wrote my first book, basically no one ever knew about it.
He might have learned that from Bill LaMotte, because it sounded like that's something Bill would have done as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was just do the right thing, everything else will work out. And the funny moment was, you know, later in the day, I'm down in the cafeteria, some buddies of mine were just having lunch and telling them about it. And I was explaining to them, I said, I just couldn't get over the reaction of people to Ali, these total strangers. And one of the guys said, you know, Franklin, he said, you were with one of the two, three most famous people in the world. He said, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all. I never kind of thought of it that way.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, you got the Pope, you got a couple other people, President of the United States, throwing a few more, but it was amazing.
You're right there, yeah.
Yeah. But Carlos, you know, he was a real leader. Carlos was a leader, and he was a people person, which was, I always think, was his strong suit. And he and I got very close, because I have to tell a story of myself. Here I am, the whiz-bang government relations guy.
Right, right.
Carlos ended up being the Secretary of Commerce under George W. Bush.
Right.
And how it happened, and Carlos and I are still very close, and I told him he needs to write a book about this, which I think he will. But, you know, he's a great story. You know, Cuban American comes here, you know, immigrants, and ends up coming from, you know, kind of nowhere to becoming the Secretary of Commerce.
Isn't that something? Only in America.
But anyway, so let's see, the 04 election, George Bush is running against Kerry, and Bush is doing a bus tour of West Michigan because we're the swing part of a swing state at this time. So he was going to Muskegon, Holland, and Battle Creek, I guess it was.
Yeah.
But Carlos comes by my office and says, hey, you want to go out and see, you know, the president's rally? I said, yeah, okay, let's do that. So I jump in, he's driving, he gets in the car, we drive over to the baseball field where the rally is going to be. And because I'm with Carlos, we go sit in the VIP box. And so we're sitting in the VIP box, and, you know, here comes the president, and the bands are playing, and, the, you know, it's all the hoopla that goes with it. And the president gives his speech, and at the end, one of the advanced guys comes by and says, Carlos, you know, Carlos, and he picked out, I think, Joe Schwartz, who might have been the congressman or the mayor, but Joe, you know, anyway, dignitaries were in the box with us. He picked out like five or six of them, including Carlos, and said, you know, the president would like to meet with you for a minute. So I told Carlos, well, I'll just, you know, I'll meet you back at the car, okay? So I'm getting in the car, and I don't know, 45 minutes later, here comes Carlos. He gets in, cranks up the car, kind of quiet, and he looks at me. He says, I think that guy offered me a job.
That guy?
I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, I'm about to win this thing. You're coming on board, right? And I said, Carlos. I said, what'd he say? He said, yeah, somehow we win this thing. I said, oh, hell, he probably told that to 50 people up and down the
West Coast. There you go.
I mean, you know, and I said, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. You know? So I don't think anything of it. Then about 2-3 days after the election, I get a call from Carlos's admin. Says, can you get men to come see Carlos? I said, sure. So I go over there. And he goes, he shuts the door, and he says, okay, you have to promise me you will tell absolutely no one.
Okay.
And I mean no one, what I'm about to tell you. And I said, sure, you know, what is it? And he said, well, I just got a call from the White House, and they want me to be the Secretary of Commerce. And I looked at him, and excuse my language, but I looked, I said, you're shitting me. The old whiz bang here, I said, oh, yeah, you know. So anyways, and then it was quite a ride, because we ended up, I did Carlos's confirmation hearings with him, and, you know, getting them to Washington and
all that. And the rest, as they say, is history. You know, it's so amazing. But isn't it something about, you know, you've shared the story between Bill LaMode and, of course, Carlos here, you know, and people with integrity doing the right things. And it just seems to come back and pay off in big buckets. And you know what? I think that's kind of how your life, George Franklin, has gone. And we're so glad you're here sharing it with us right here on the Leadership Lowdown. Thanks for tuning in. We've got one quick segment left. We'll be right back.
Sonair has been advancing communities and providing opportunities for people in Michigan for more than 25 years. Through lending, investments, and the creation of homes and jobs, Sonair has made a combined $7 billion impact on the communities they serve. Learn more at www.sonair.com. Michigan.
had such a great time here talking to George Franklin. He is doing an amazing job of sharing what has been an amazing life, and I'm so glad he's with us here on the Leadership Lowdown. You know, George, as we kind of unfolded this whole thing, you mentioned to Carlos that maybe he should write a book, and you encouraged him. You've got a little experience with writing the books, and tell me about that.
Well, after Carlos went off to save the world in Washington, as Secretary of Commerce,
right,
I went to sort of my book writing phase of my life. And like I said, I've written 4 books, 2 nonfiction and 2 fiction. And the impetus for my first book was I worked with a lot of really smart people at Kellogg, and they had MBAs from all sorts of fancy schools. But the one thing nobody had any familiarity with was government relations.
Mm.
So I called the dean of the business school, Western Michigan. I said, "Do you teach government relations?" And she said, "Well, no, that's political science." And I said, "Well, every major company in the United States has a government relations department, just like sales, finance, and marketing."
Right.
But there is not a business school. I did a survey, which I can't say it's totally comprehensive, but I have not found a business school that teaches what I call real life government relations.
Oh my God. It's just so common sense there. You're exactly right.
But they don't do it. So I wrote a book. I said, "I'm going to write a book that tells people what I did as the lobbyist for Kellogg. And I'm going to tell them what I really did as opposed to what they think I did." That's like the Ali stories in there. The story about South Africa is in there. Because that's what I did. And I marketed it to business schools. And if I do say so, it was very successful. It's a plane ride overview. You can read it in a couple hours. But it gives business students a feel and some idea of what those people down the hall are doing in the government relations department.
Right, right.
And then, Vic, I went off, and as I said before, in a moment of temporary insanity, ran for Congress, which was an exhausting experience.
That'll leave a mark.
Yeah, it was like, well. But I, once again, I wrote a book, "So You Think You Want to Run for Congress." It's sort of laid out there what it's really like to run for Congress. Thousands of phone calls, coffees, all the things you do. And so I did that. And then I switched to fiction. And I thought, you know, I'm going to have some fun with all this now. And so I wrote a book called Incentives, where I made fun of corporate America out there wallowing in the public trough, trying to get incentives under the guise of free enterprise and capitalism. And it's based in Southwest Michigan. So I have a lot of the area people will be familiar with. And then finally, I just came out with a book a couple months ago called The Feeding Frenzy in Washington. It's fictional. It's about a food lobbyist named PJ Snake Boots Jackson. And the characters are all fictional, but they're composites of real people.
Oh, dear. You just might find some truth in there, right?
Oh, you'll find a lot of truth in there. You'll find a lot of truth in what they do and where they go. And if I do so, most people have found it pretty funny.
Yeah, I've been told it's flat out hilarious.
Yeah, and like, well, Chris loved it. Chris, he was hooting over it.
Yeah.
And so anyways, it's been a lot of fun, and it's selling well. But if you're a person interested in the world of Washington, how it works, it'll give you some vibes of what really goes on. It's kind of crazy, but it's not that crazy. So,
well, how do we get our hands on all that? George, how do we get our hands on those books?
First of all, my website is georgefranklinauthor.com, georgefranklinauthor.com. And my email, if anybody wants to track me down, is george@georgefranklinauthor.com. And I love to do book clubs. I do like the luncheon I did with you the other day. I make it light. I make it fun. It's bipartisan. I hope you felt that way, Vic.
You bet. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I've sort of moved on from the partisan band of things, and now let's all sit back and have some good laughs at this.
Yeah. So, and you'd be willing to come out to speak to companies, to organizations and such, that you're available for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely doing that. And I'm on the road with it. And it's a 20, 25 minute, and then I do some Q&As. But like I said, it's light, it's fun. Most people find it pretty funny, but it's educational. It tells you, here's a factoid, you know, terrify the people of America.
Yeah.
Last year, there were 12,112 registered lobbyists in Washington, D.C.
That'll keep you awake.
God save it.
George, I got to ask, we've only got one thin minute left here on our final segment. Look, for young people, people that are starting out, different things, you've lived an extraordinary life. Here's a big challenge for you. Is there any advice you could offer them in that little bit of, that we've got that's kind of the bumper sticker for why your life has been so successful?
Go where your heart leads you.
Oh, outstanding.
You know, it's hokey, it's standard, but it's true. You know, I got involved each step along the way because I thought, you know, this is where I want to go and this is what I want to do. And hopefully some money follows, hopefully some success follows. But yeah, you don't need to read a form book and follow the rules. Just go where your heart leads you.
Well, I think that's great advice. You know, when I'm sitting here, I think you've got to wake up every morning going, was that real? Did I have that dream? Did this really happen? Because you've lived an extraordinary life and you're willing to share it with us is really so meaningful. George Franklin, you are, sir, a genuine national treasure, and you're sharing your time with us here on Leadership Lowdown. George, thank you so much. You're something special. Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here and great to have you listening in on the Leadership Lowdown. This is the Michigan Business Network. I'm Vic Verschro. I can't wait to talk to you next time. Michigan.